Hello, it's Thursday the 16th of December and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. South Korea has announced that it will be tightening social distancing rules to some of the strictest levels once again in order to combat the surging number of COVID-19 cases. We'll have the details in our news briefing shortly. For Korean Politics Digest this week, we'll be looking at the latest addition to the camp of the ruling DP's presidential candidate, Lee Jae-myung, and controversies surrounding the wife of the main opposition PPP candidate, Yoon Sung-yeol. And then on Explore Korea, we'll be learning more about the Gyeonggi Line Forest Park that stretches across over 6 kilometers through the heart of Seoul. Let's begin Korea 24. So it's been confirmed, South Korea announced that it will once again tighten social distancing regulations on private gatherings and business hours to its toughest level as the number of critically ill patients topped 900 for a third day to post another record high. Joining us now in the studio to outline these measures for us and bring us the rest of the day's headlines is our KBS World Radio news editor, Koo Hee-jin. Hello, Hee-jin.
Hello, Jang.
So President Moon Jae-in apologized today, Thursday, for essentially rewinding the clock to levels before easing restrictions in November. With that in mind, can you outline these new measures for us?
Of course, Prime Minister Kim Bok-yeom announced tougher protocols on Thursday, including a cap on private gatherings to 4 fully vaccinated people nationwide starting Saturday. A 9 p.m. curfew on business hours for restaurants and cafes will also take effect. Unvaccinated people will be required to visit alone or use takeout or delivery services. Entertainment facilities vulnerable to virus risks will also close at 9 p.m., while movie theaters, concert halls and internet cafes are allowed to operate until 10 p.m. The toughened regulations will apply until January 2nd, and the government will reassess the situation at the end of the year. President Moon Jae-in apologized for backtracking on social distancing. Presidential spokesperson Park Kyung-mi said on Thursday that the president made the apology, acknowledging that the government failed to curb a surge in patients with severe symptoms during the living with COVID-19 period and admitted that it fell behind in preparing enough hospital beds. He vowed prompt financial support for small business owners who will likely suffer the most from these stricter measures.
In other restrictions, the government will also lower classroom density at schools in the capital region, and health officials expect daily infections to jump to 10,000, that range, within the month. Can you tell us more?
Yes, according to the Education Ministry on Thursday, up to 3 days will be allowed for schools to prepare for sparser classes, lowering attendance to 2/3 within the capital and overcrowded schools in other regions starting Monday, and expected to last until the start of the winter break. The ministry also advised schools to suspend group and outdoor activities and recommended that year-end events, including graduation ceremonies, be held virtually. Now, the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency Commissioner Jung Eun-kyung predicted that daily COVID-19 infections would jump to 10,000 and critical cases to 1,900 within the month, and expressed concern over the large gatherings of people during the upcoming New Year holiday. The KDCA on Thursday added 7,622 new cases, down by about 220 from the previous day, raising the nation's cumulative total to 544,117. The number of patients with severe symptoms posted yet another all-time high at 989. 62 more people died of the virus, raising the overall death toll to 4,518, while the number of Omicron infections rose by 20 to 148.
Let's continue on now to our other headlines of the day. Ruling Democratic Party presidential candidate Lee Jae-myung issued an apology after a local newspaper reported that his son took part in illegal gambling. Can you tell us more?
Yes, in a statement issued on Thursday, Lee Jae-myung admitted that the person singled out in a recent report by major daily Joseon Ilbo was indeed his son, who had briefly fallen prey to temptation. Lee, who is neck and neck in polls with his main rival, the opposition's Yoon Sung-yeol, for the March 9th elections, offered an apology and vowed never to allow a recurrence, adding that his son regrets his past actions and that he will receive therapy. The Joseon Ilbo reported earlier that a person presumed to be Lee's son posted more than 100 comments related to the sale and purchase of digital poker money on an online community site using a server in the U.S. between January 2019 and July 2020. The paper also said the son allegedly posted comments on visits to offline gambling dens in the Seoul metropolitan area.
Moving on, the Bank of Korea said inflation will likely hover above 2% for quite some time on the back of a faster than expected economic recovery and increasing price pressure. So what more did the BOK say?
Well, according to its report released on Thursday, the central bank projected the consumer prices will exceed its 2% target for longer than expected. The report said the nation's core consumer pricing index, or CPI, which excludes volatile food and fuel, to jump to nearly 2% next year as price pressure grows on durable goods amid persisting global supply chain woes. The BOK explained that upside risks to inflation are more dominant than its downside risks, citing continued price hikes in raw materials, global supply bottlenecks, further recovery in consumption, and rising inflation expectations.
Turning to the tug of war between the U.S. and China, a senior U.S. official expounded on the need for trustworthy networks and that Seoul and Washington will discuss cooperation in the network sector at talks on Friday. Can you tell us more about these talks?
Yes. Jose Fernandez, the Undersecretary of State for Economic Growth, Energy and the Environment, made the remarks while speaking to reporters at the opening of a bilateral economic forum in Seoul on Thursday. Fernandez said that the U.S. is talking to several countries interested in establishing fifth-generation or 5G networks and that there will likely be opportunities for South Korean companies. Now, our listeners may well remember that while 5G and future 6G telecommunications technology are at the core of the Sino-U.S. rivalry, Washington suspects Beijing uses such technology for economic espionage. At Thursday's forum, Second Vice Foreign Minister Choi Jong-moon said Seoul and Washington will discuss enhancing cooperation in cybersecurity, artificial intelligence and quantum technology as part of their upcoming sixth senior economic dialogue.
And finally, people in Korea should be prepared to wrap up warm this weekend as the nation will see the coldest weather so far this season from Friday, with heavy snow expected in the central and western regions. So, Heejin, can you give us the forecast?
Yes, of course. The Korea Meteorological Administration forecast morning lows to range between minus 8 to 4 degrees Celsius on Friday nationwide, with afternoon highs ranging between minus 4 and 6 degrees. The mercury will drop to minus 5 degrees Celsius in Seoul Friday morning and hit 3 degrees in the afternoon. The cold spell will last through the weekend, with temperatures in the central regions and parts of North Gyeongsang and North Jeollab provinces dipping to below minus 10 degrees on Saturday. The morning low in Seoul will hit minus 9 degrees on the same day. Heavy snow is in the forecast from early Friday morning, beginning with the western regions. Snow will expand to the southern regions before stopping on Sunday morning.
That's where we'll wrap it up for our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
Thank you.
The wife of the presidential candidate Yoon Sung-yeol from the main opposition People Power Party has been in the headlines this week. Art curator Kim Gun-hee has been accused of exaggerating and falsifying credentials on her resume when she applied for various positions in universities over the years. The situation is threatening to become a major headache for Yoon's campaign, but it's also raised questions about the role that spouses play in presidential elections. We'll be looking closer at this issue, but first we'll be rounding up some developments concerning the ruling Democratic Party's candidate Lee Jae-myung, including the return of a notable party figure. Joining us on the line now for Korean Politics Digest is Affiliate Professor Kim Byung-ju from the Hanguk University of Foreign Studies. Professor Kim, it's great to talk to you again.
Great to join you as well. Good evening.
We begin today with Lee Jae-myung, the ruling Democratic Party's candidate and the latest addition to his campaign. Park Young-sun, the former minister for SMEs and startups and the ruling party's unsuccessful candidate for the Seoul mayoral by-election earlier this year, has joined Lee's camp as Digital Transformation Committee chief. After she lost that election in April, she went to the U.S. to work as a senior advisor for a major think tank, but she is returning to Korean politics, set to return from the States this week. So, Professor, what's your take on Park's return and her joining Lee's election campaign committee?
I noticed many observers express a little bit of sense of surprise of her quote-unquote quick return to the main political arena because we, as you mentioned, she ran for the mayoral race just this year, a few months ago, and she's coming back here. There's no question that Park Young-sun is a heavyweight and also maybe freer from the what we would call negative images of the Moon's team, Moon government, in the eyes of the critics. We know a Moon government is quite popular among their supporters, but in the eyes of their critics, you know, the core Moon group or Moon government leadership, she's a little bit, she keeps some distance from it, and she's basically an outsider, you know, considering who are the main core groups. So in a way, it's an interesting calculation as candidate Lee try to show his distance from Moon and gain more room or freedom to criticize Moon government. Park Young-sun's choice of Park Young-sun seems to make sense. She's a heavyweight, as I said, as a politician. She has a four-time lawmaker, and I think she also ran for, she ran for mayoral race internal competition back in 2018. So I would say she ran for mayoral race twice, 2018 and then 2021. And so she is a well-known figure. You know, people recognize her well. And the interesting thing is her coming back as a main policy frontier or face of the so-called digital policy, it's quite interesting. She served as, before she ran for the mayoral position, she worked as the Minister of SMEs. And we do understand, we do recall, as the minister taking care of small business, she did a pretty good job. We saw her drive and you know, her charisma and leadership and so on. And as a minister, she was very proactive and visible. Not being a member of core Moon group, she made a good mark and everything. So quite an interesting combination of calculation and image and everything. In the eyes of critics, however, there's a question. Even though she did a good job as an SME minister, to what extent does she really stand for the so-called digital transformation or digital policy, IT policy? She's more better known as a media person. She was anchorwoman, and she talks well. She's a good speaks, good speaker and everything. But how much of specialty insight does she have for future industry and IT? I'm sure she has learned a lot as a minister of SMEs and so on. So many eyes are watching with certain expectation how she's going to pull this out and everything. And so many eyes are watching. Talking about her, also relates to the overall, Lee's policy towards the so-called the digital initiative or digital transformation. Mm. We look through the ideas that have been introduced so far, and I guess analysts agree that basically what Lee Jae-myung calls digital transformation as one of his key policy ideas, there isn't much new that can differentiate it from the Moon's, the policy drive so far. So
right.
It will remain as a big challenge in terms of like, what are you offering, anything new? How would you actually improve upon Moon's policy, digital New Deal, for instance? Mm. How is it different from digital New Deal when you talk about IoT, Internet of Things, and 5G and AI and everything? How is Lee's policy trademark or sense of direction of helping Korea's IT industry and digital industry develop, how is it different, and how are you building upon Moon's initiatives? I think that's a lot of work to be done here. And technically speaking, I mean, Park Yong-sun will be the face of this drive, but what she brings in, her relatively successful career as a minister of SMEs is a definite plus, but
right.
But we need more here, right? So the public will be closely watching what kind of difference can she make, and then what kind of meat Lee Jae-myung could actually add upon what has been discussed so far on digital policy drive here.
So somewhat of a DP heavyweight coming back to help, but we'll see what she brings to this race in the weeks ahead.
Right.
Meanwhile, the candidates, Lee Jae-myung, you mentioned how he's continuing to try to distance himself from the administration, and he continued that further this week, criticizing the government's handling of the coronavirus situation. He called for stronger quarantine measures and said there is not enough government support for small business owners. What do you make of his comments there, and how could the COVID-19 situation affect the campaign?
Right, indeed. This is a big issue area and big topic for political talks and debates going forward here in the presidential campaign for sure. And I guess Lee showing clear distancing in this issue area, moving away from Moon government, we do remember he was closely with the government on the corona policy front, right? He was saying that, the K quarantine was a great policy early on, and what's being done by the current government is a great thing. When he was a governor, he praised a lot. He placed himself as a team, one team, together with the Moon government on this. But the critical factor behind the latest turnaround, is the public opinion. Public opinion, well, we saw recent numbers here, and the recent polls seem to indicate that actually there are a greater number of people who are not satisfied with the Moon government's handling of coronavirus situation lately than those people who are happy with it. So that's a big turnaround. And as a political candidate, they're facing running in the presidential campaign. If you disregard that, that's going to be very suboptimal choice. So Lee Jae-myung made a no-nonsense choice in a way, and he has raised this interesting rhetoric. If Korea did anything right about coronavirus, it's people's sacrifice. Korean people have sacrificed, and we have maintained situation so far. And it's not the government achievement. So I think that's pretty powerful rhetoric, taking side with the public opinion and keeping distance away from Moon government here. Mm. And the latest idea proposal from Lee Jae-myung is interesting. We talked a lot about this, 50 trillion won, the 100 trillion won, whatever, support and blah, blah, blah and all that. But latest idea he offered is that let's offer the aid and relief to the small business owners upfront now. And then redo the calculation and say, if they have to pay back some of them, let's take them back. They are in need. They are in dire need and urgent need. So give them money now. Mm. and then take care of the calculation and accounting later on. And I think that's an interesting idea. And idea man as he is, Lee Jae-myung, he's continuously coming up with these ideas, and observers are watching with great interest on this front as well.
Right, and we'll see whether that does move voters or not. Let's shift gears now and talk about, frankly, the hottest political issue this week. Kim Gun-hee, the wife of the main opposition candidate Yoon Sung-yeol, has been at the centre of headlines over the last few days. Earlier this week, a local broadcaster reported that Kim had exaggerated and falsified her credentials on a resume when applying for a teaching position at Suwon Women's University in 2007. Since then, more instances of resume padding has been found, up to as recently as 2014 when she was married to Yoon. In light of this situation, Kim offered her regrets yesterday for rousing public distress. She said regardless of whether the allegations are true, she is sorry for causing public concern. Now, this is the latest in a series of controversies surrounding Kim, including her alleged involvement in a stock market manipulation scheme and rumours that she used to work as a high-end hostess. Professor, I know you would rather be talking about policies, but once again for Yoon, policies have taken a back seat as his camp has had to deal with this latest situation. What do you make of all this surrounding Kim?
I think we have to recognize there are two different dimensions of the issue here mixed up here, and we have to differentiate them. Number one is the overall, this social issue, the issue that this country face, so-called the morality of the elites class, those people who seem to do well economically, social positions and all that, their morality, their judgment, how that goes. There is that ethics. Question number one. Mm. Number two is political question of First Lady. How important is First Lady in a ticket? Their qualifications, their morality, their background and everything. So there are two different issues are kind of mixed together here. First one, a little bit relatively briefly, elite morality, fabrication of records, in the critic's expression, lying to the public. That's a serious, serious issue. So in that sense, some critics, especially from the ruling party side, they said, what's the difference between Jogo case and this one?
Right. So Yoon's campaign, I mean, he's essentially launched his presidential bid as a champion for fairness and equality after going after the former Justice Minister Cho-guk, who essentially was taken down over various allegations involving his family, including that his wife had forged qualifications for their daughter's college admission. Cho was also previously championed as a figure for fairness and equality, but after those allegations came out, he was branded a hypocrite. And it's not only tarnished his reputation, but the ruling party overall as well.
Right.
Do you think Yoon will also be labelled with this sort of label as well, as a hypocrite, or could this be something different?
That's exactly what the ruling party wants to do. Lee Jae-myung's campaign team would like to do that, probably. However, though, we have to listen to the voice from the other side. The other side would be is arguing right now. This is different from Jok's case. Jok's case is much more serious. Issue about social class here. Parents trying to perpetuate the elite class, the membership of the elite class down to their children by making fabrication of the records and then telling lies about their children. That's a very important social class issue altogether, and which is different from elites taking care of their careers and so on. So we need a lot of debate on this going forward. And of which side is right? I don't think many people have a judgment yet. One side is they're the same. The other side is fundamentally different. Joe case was much more serious one. And this is, in terms of the weight of its seriousness, is relatively speaking, it's a little bit light on the other side. Mm. And plus, this is about spouse. Spouse is not on the ticket, they are saying. So we have to move on to the second dimension of this issue.
Right.
How important is First Lady on the ticket, the future First Lady? It's a difficult question here, right? And one of the interesting things we can do is we can look back. We cannot go all the way back. Maybe we had Yoo Kyung-soo and the Park Jung-hee, who played a really, really important role for Park Jung-hee's political career as he was ruling the country, of course. But let's make a jump. Kim Dae-jung's case, Lee Hee-ho, she was a prominent figure. She was the leader of the society. So basically, it was a different time. Kim Dae-jung's first lady, Lee Hee-ho, was a very, very prominent social movement leader and so on. But the thing is, after that, Nomuyen's case, Kwon Yang-suk, a lot of people would agree that she was a liability during the campaign, and then she was in the eyes of critics of Nomuyen, they would say Kwon Yang-suk was a liability towards the end of Nomuyen's career and have some bearing on his ending of his life as well. Mm. So quite negative, relatively speaking, in the eyes of critics. And Lee Myung-bak's case, Kim Yoon-ok, she was kind of neutral. She tried hard, a lot of things, but she invited a lot of criticism because of activism. So at that time, they were saying, we don't want to see an activist first lady, a lot of critics were saying. And then Moon Jae-in's case, current first lady Kim Jong-suk, looks like it's a successful case, a very good supporter. She seems to have a right amount of activism and visibility, and that seems to work out pretty well and all that. So we can look back these kind of cases and think about, you know, each voters. They will make up their own mind and they'll think how important is First Lady. I think it's basically individual voters' choice. And then in doing so, leading to that point, I guess one of the things that we should keep in mind is that from the perspective of on the side of Yoon's campaign team, what really matters is not truth or facts, right? I mean, it's not like about debating whether she fabricated or not, whatever, what points. That's not the way to go. During the political campaign, what matters is public sentiment, public emotion, how the process is handled. Mm. And in that sense, you know, this apology that was made,
right,
you know,
critics
yesterday
are saying
whatever,
is not really an apology.
Right. Some people are saying that. The thing is, however, sincere apology and recognition of the mistakes and so on probably would be the best way of handling this issue. We'll have to wait and see on that. But debating facts, true or false, is not going to probably deliver any political gains on the Yoon side, I suppose. But we'll have to see how that strategy of handling the public emotion and the sentiments will produce the final results. We'll need time on that.
Right. In the meantime, I do feel this situation could embroil further and that we'll be seeing more of these headlines. But for now, we'll leave it there for Korean Politics Digest this week. Professor, as always, thank you for your insights and we'll talk again next time.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 17.02 points, or 0.57% on Thursday, closing the day at 3,006.31. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also rose, gaining 4.34 points, or 0.43%, to close at 1,007.86. On the foreign exchange, the local currency gained 1.31 against the dollar, ending the day at 1,183.91. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
It's time now to look at some of the other news stories that have been trending online in Korea today in our daily segment called Korea Trending. And for that, we have Chung Yewon in the studio to bring us those stories today. Yewon, hello.
Hello.
Okay, let's jump straight into the stories today. What do you have for us first, Yeon?
Our first story is about South Korean gymnast and Olympic gold medalist Shin Jae-won allegedly assaulting a taxi driver while under the influence. According to the Daejeon Yosang Police Station, just around 1 a.m. on Wednesday, a taxi driver filed a report to the police saying that he had been assaulted by the 23-year-old athlete.
Yes, many will remember him from the recent Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games, where he won that surprise gold in the men's vault. So he was very much lauded then. Mm-hmm. So what's happened here then, Yewon? How did the assault take place, according to the taxi driver's report?
So the driver said the assault began when he simply asked where Shin was headed, and while the police called Shin in for further questioning at the time, they had to send him back home because he was too intoxicated. But they said they'll be calling him again soon.
Yes, yeah, so it seems he was considerably drunk at the time then. Has there been any response from Shin or those representing him?
Well, the Korean Gymnastics Association said they are waiting for the investigation results before making an official statement. And following the incident, the national gymnastics team and affiliated team are preparing thorough player management measures.
Yes, it's a troubling story, especially as I understand that he's been struggling with injuries in recent months and even failed to retain his national team status.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps the incident points to some other issues he's having, but we'll have to wait and see what he says himself on the incident. Okay, moving on. What's our next story of the day?
It's about the rivalry between two South Korean head coaches currently active in Southeast Asia. Many are familiar with the two as they're pretty famous here in South Korea, but for those wondering, the two coaches are Park Hang-seo and Shin Tae-yong, who coach the Vietnamese and Indonesian football teams respectively. The two teams led by Park and Shin drew 0-0 in the Group B match of the ASEAN Football Federation Championship that took place in Singapore on Wednesday local time.
Right, so it was the Battle of the Korean Coaches at the AFF Championships, also known as the Suzuki Cup, but it seems they rather nullified each other with that goalless draw. So with that result then, how are the two teams doing in terms of their position within Group B?
While both squads have 2 wins and a draw and are at the top with 7 points, Indonesia edges out Vietnam as they have a higher number of goals scored. But it's worth pointing out that according to FIFA, Vietnam ranks at 99th, far ahead of Indonesia, currently sitting at 166th. And Coach Park is deemed a significant figure in Vietnam's football history because since he was hired as their new football coach, they established their position as the best football team in Southeast Asia. And in the first match between the two coaches back in June for the 2022 FIFA World Cup qualifiers, Vietnam blew Indonesia out 4-0. But yesterday's stalemate was tough for both sides, and the Vietnamese media said that Shin knew Park's tactics too well from their history of playing against each other in the K-League. And after the match, Shin said that he told his players that not losing was the goal considering Vietnam is a very strong team. And he also said that his players followed his coaching directions very well. And interestingly, all 4 referees at the game were Korean, so it was a fascinating scene to see the coaches complain to the referees in Korean.
Right, I'm not sure the referees would have enjoyed that. I think they might have preferred a language barrier. But anyway, the two teams take up the top 2 spots in their group for now. And if they stay there, they'll proceed to the knockout stages. So the situation is not too bad for them at the moment. Who are they facing next?
So Indonesia will be going against Malaysia and Vietnam against Cambodia for their final group match on Sunday. And these matches will determine who gets to compete in the semifinals.
Right, so if the results go their way, they might still face each other again in the final.
Mm-hmm.
But we shouldn't count our chickens yet, of course, and see how they fare in that final round of group matches.
Yes.
Okay, let's finish things off with our final trending topic now, and it's from the entertainment world.
Yes, our last story is on Hwang Chun-sung, better known as Chun-sung of K-pop group 2PM. Yesterday, the 31-year-old took to social media announcing that he will be tying the knot sometime at the start of next year and also announced that his wife-to-be is expecting. Hwang started off his post by saying that he had been seeing someone and over time she became a haven for his unstable state of mind, as well as a friend and someone he could talk to. He also said that after he was discharged from the military, he was planning on getting ready to wed his partner when an unexpected blessing came to them. He went on to say that he will not be disclosing any information about the bride-to-be to respect her privacy as she isn't in show business.
Congratulations are in order, of course. Now, I'm sure fans are wondering, though, what impact this announcement can mean for his career, as many before him typically go on a hiatus.
Yes, well, Hwang revealed that he decided not to renew his contract with JYP Entertainment, his agency of 15 years, and he stated that after much thought and discussion with his agency, he decided that it would be the right decision to start paving his own path with a new family coming along.
Right, I think that might be quite a shock for some, seeing that 2PM actually had a comeback not so long ago,
mm-hmm.
and Hwang is starring in a drama at the moment as well.
That's right. However, fans shouldn't be too worried as Chan Sang, the singer, reassured that he will continue to work hard as 2PM's 막내, meaning youngest member in Korean, and Hwang Chan-sung, the actor, will work just as hard as well to not disappoint his fans. And though some fans did say they were taken aback by this unexpected news, most were congratulating him and sent their best wishes to his upcoming future and family.
Indeed. So not a part of JYP, but still a member of 2PM and still staying busy.
Yes.
Okay, that's where we'll wrap it up for Korea Trending. Thank you for those stories, Yewon, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
Time for our weekly segment, Explore Korea, where we take a journey across the peninsula, discovering more about the country's history, culture, and travel highlights. And once again with us this week is Allison Needles from the blog Pinpoint Korea. She joins us on the line now. Ali, hello. It's great to speak to you again.
Nice to speak with you too.
Okay, so Ali, the winter season has officially arrived in Korea, and it's very chilly outside. But that doesn't mean we can't wrap up warm and still go exploring outside. I know there's a place here right in the heart of Seoul that you wanted to introduce to us today.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to talk about the Gyeonggi Line Forest Park. Have you been there before?
Yes, I've walked parts of it before as I've been looking for some cafes and restaurants around there.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's actually much longer than I thought. So I'll just give a brief introduction to this park. So it crosses between some very trendy neighborhoods. Some of you might know the names Yeonnam-dong, Hongdae, or Shincheon are the kind of most populated areas for the Gyeonggi Line Forest Park. And that's because these are all university areas. The park actually officially opened in 2015, but it has stretched out during that time to become 6.3 kilometers. So now it goes all the way to Munbaedong, which is near Yongsan Station in central Seoul. Mm. And it can actually go as far as the Hongjaecheon Stream, which can lead you south to the Han River. And if you walk up to the north, you'll reach a waterfall at the end. But even though this is kind of newly opened as a park, the history behind this area dates back to over a century ago.
Right, so we're talking about the Gyeonggi Line Forest Park, and that's Gyeonggi-san Supgil in Korean. Can you tell us a bit more about the history behind this park then? Because it wasn't always a park, right?
Right, absolutely. And you can kind of hear that history in the name itself. So the line kind of references the Gyeonggi Railway Line. So it was actually a railway line that was constructed by the Japanese when they colonized Korea, slightly before. So it was 1905 that it was first started to be built. Mm. And at that time, it had connected Seoul to Shinriju, which is in North Korea. You can't go to North Korea anymore, though.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously. and it was abandoned as a railway line in the 1950s. So, you know, the Korean War was the reason for that. So pretty much until that time, it was just sitting there as these empty railroad tracks doing nothing.
Right, so essentially an abandoned railway line built originally by the Japanese, which in the past would have gone all the way up to North Korea as well, left derelict for many decades then. But as you mentioned, it was officially opened as a park in 2016. So how has it been transformed and why should we visit there now?
So the park was created when the line actually went underground. So it wasn't just, you know, like I mentioned, completely empty. There were the railroad tracks. So people thought, okay, this is a nice kind of walking trail. It's already there. It already cuts across, you know, popular area. So they transformed it to a kind of beautiful park with lots of sitting areas. And because of the nature of the universities popping up around it, it was really accessible to reach cafes and bars and shopping areas. Like I mentioned, and it became this really huge socialization area. It's a really good place to meet new people, especially for the young students who are coming in. I know a lot of foreign exchange students go there, and sometimes they'll go on nights out just in the park, you know, just sitting there having a beer. And you can drink and eat and play with your family as well, all times, all seasons of the year. Although it does tend to be popular with younger crowds, it stretches very far. You know, there are many different areas that you can go to that are a bit quieter or are more family friendly. So yeah, it's just like a really, really long outstretched park.
Right. So it's at the heart of, as you said, a very young and trendy area now with lots of cafes and bars, as we've mentioned, even to the point where I'm starting to feel a little old when I go there
Me
nowadays.
Too.
But that's not all, though, because it is also famous for its natural landscapes. Can you tell us a bit more about the scenery we can see there as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that it's very beautiful, and that's what recently made it so popular in Korean dramas as a kind of romantic setting. If you've seen Hospital Playlist, I think it recently appeared in that. So there are all kinds of things. There are small ponds you can see with fish, actual fish. There are streams that go down to the Han River. And additionally, the part in Yeonnam-dong is lined with ginkgo trees. I think some other areas as well near Hyochang Park. So it's really beautiful to walk in the autumn season. If you go further away from Hongdae, you can find a lot of grassy fields up in the northern part. And additionally, this is a really great space for kind of art installations and statues. So things like that are popping up all the time, coming and going. And it's kind of earned a nickname called Yuntrao Park, which is kind of a reference to Central Park because of all of these
kind of cultural
things,
yeah.
Right, in New York City. But for me, I don't know if that quite squares up. A lot of the grass here is artificial, actually, and, you know, it's a very narrow path. It's very stretched. Mm. But despite not quite reminding me of New York City, it's definitely enjoyable, and it's really beautiful in different seasons.
Right, so parts of it have a bit of a man-made feel to it. But it is true that it's hard to find places like this in Seoul, as we don't have our own kind of Central Park as of yet. Perhaps that will change when the former U.S. military base in Yongsan is converted into this massive public park that they're planning the next decade or so. That's still a long way off. Still, we do have this Gyeonggi Forest Park that we can enjoy. Ali, what would you say is your favorite thing to do down at the park?
I think for me, the best thing about the park is the kind of natural desire to want to exercise there. Because it's this long stretch, I always find myself wanting to bring my bike, and you can bike it. And there's also exercise equipment along the way, so you can go and do some stretches and things like that. And I've also seen lots of yoga classes come here, Pilates classes come, and they bring their mats out on the grass in the summer. Even just people, you know, doing it for fun. Mm. There's so many places for dogs to run around. You do have to keep your dog on a leash, as far as I know. And the nice thing that I see here is that big dogs come here. It's not easy to find places for big dogs in Seoul, but this is a really great place for them to run around and play and for their owners to join them as well.
Sure, but as you said, dogs all kept on a leash there. Actually, we've mainly talked about one side of the park that stretches past Yeonnam-dong. There's another side that runs through Hongdae and towards Sincheon, which has something very different to offer as well, right?
Yeah, this is actually my favorite part. So the Gyeonggi Line Book Street is on the Hongdae side towards Sincheon, like you said. And this book street is a kind of multi-purpose cultural space. It features little bookshops in train carriages, so once again referencing the history that was there on the train lines. And it's just this amazing, you know, free monument to famous Korean authors and poets and playwrights. And you can come here any day of the week except Monday, but their events and the things that they do run on a daily schedule. So Tuesday, they have cultural programs based on literature and other humanities. On Wednesdays, they actually offer meetings for local designers and artists and writers. On Thursday, there are travel-related programs like tours for foreigners as well. On Friday, there are some cultural programs that are only about kind of new and classic Korean literature. Saturday is really great for families to come because they have book programs directed for kids. And on Sunday, it's these kind of book readings, poetry concerts, music concerts, a lot of outdoor events. And so you can come and check out these any day of the week between 11 a.m. and 8 p.m. If you want to know more information about what exactly is going on, they don't have a website by themselves, but you can check the Mapo-gu, that's the district where it's located, website. And you can learn all about what's going on and what's going to come next on the Mapo-gu website.
Right, so it sounds like there's plenty to do along and around the Gyeonggi Line of Forest Park. And even if you don't want to take part in these activities, it's just a nice walk to go down on as well. If you go from one end to the other, it can take maybe about an hour and a half, 2 hours, I believe.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's a great place just to kind of really get a different side of Seoul as well.
Mm.
Okay, so finally, what other information should listeners know before making their way to the park?
So like you mentioned, it's very long, so you can kind of jump in at any point, but I recommend starting from Hongik University Station, Exit 3. That's the main bustling area, and walking down from there. So the park can be accessed 24 hours. You can go any time of the day. And if you want more information about things that are going on, or if there's any special events, or if you have any kind of, you know, concerns about your own special needs, then you can go find more information at the same website, the Mapogu website, M-A-P-O, Mapogu.
Okay, well, that about does it for Explore Korea today. Ali, thank you once again for introducing us to this great space, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Yeah, make sure you dress warm when you go. It's really cold outside.
Definitely.
My name is Son Tae-jin. You're now listening to Korea 24.
We finish up the show as usual with our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features or reports coming out in tomorrow's English language newspapers here in Korea. And for that, we have joining us in the studio our staff editor, Mark Wilson-Che. Mark, hello. It's great to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Okay, Mark, so where are we headed to first?
That would be to the weekender of tomorrow's Korea Times. Kwak Yeon-soo takes us into the world of virtual media art, but with a bit of a historical twist. Now, Jagwon, I feel like I'm choosing a lot of metaverse and virtual stuff, but this is what everybody's really covering, right?
Sure.
So, yeah. Curious 12 Tales is a digital media art exhibition held at the Insa Central Museum in downtown Seoul. The show displays Korean folk tales, myths, and ghost stories through vivid digital imagery, and you can see some of that in the pictures in tomorrow's Times. Kwak writes that as the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic is accelerating the art world's adoption of immersive tech, that's extended reality, that includes virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality, it's emerging as a new driver of innovation.
I see. That's quite interesting, because I guess it wouldn't be too long ago that perhaps people would dispute digital art being considered art at all. But as you said, that view is changing rapidly. So then what can we expect to see if we were to go to this exhibition, Mark?
So I think you have to mentally prepare yourself, because from what I saw and gathered from the images and video, it's going to be, how can I say, a bit trippy and visually intense.
Okay.
To help listeners visualize it, it's not like you're looking at any moving painting in a picture frame or just going from panel to panel. Each piece, it takes up the entire space. One piece titled The Old Stories That Began with Stone and Wood. It feels like you're going through this time warp back into the time to experience these folk tales yourself firsthand. It's almost like a rainbow bridge or really interstellar.
Wow.
Another piece is almost cosmic in nature. It contains a holographic installation of a star map from the 14th century. It displays star constellations during the time of King Taejo, the founder of Joseon. So it's really cosmic, really beautiful, at least from what I saw. To learn more about the organizer's vision of the show, pick up tomorrow's Times.
Indeed. Let's move on, though. Where are we headed to next?
In October, Jung-ho, you and I talked about the Korea Forest Service leading a major reforestation project in the vast Gobi Desert.
Mm.
We talked about how South Korea, thanks to the KFS, has a deep history and knowledge in reforestation, with most of our own forests as proof, right? Well, the Korea Herald's Kim So-hyun and Lee Kwon-hyung write about the KFS hosting the 15th World Forestry Congress in May next year.
Right, I understand that this Congress is organized by the Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, and it's held only every 6 years, mm-hmm. and it's considered the largest and most influential international conference on in the forestry sector. Yeah. So for the KFS to host this, it must be an incredible honor, but I'm sure it's quite the undertaking as well.
Yes, indeed. And the KFS has been busy. They've held meetings on forestry cooperation with ambassadors of Asia and the EU. They've also invited other related organizations to a tree planting event to celebrate the International Day of Forests in March, all in the name of promotion, right? The KFS even brought in the animation studio behind those famous larva characters, right, to promote the event. So that's, sure, that should be pretty fun. Now, one representative of the KFS told the Herald that the goal is to have some 10,000 participants attend the conference. So that's pretty amazing. To read more about the KFS and how they're preparing to host the event, but also learn about some of the incredible work that the KFS has been up to lately, you need to pick up tomorrow's Herald.
Okay, that'll be all for Morning Edition Preview today. Thank you for those stories, Mark, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Talk to you then.
And that's all for our show today as well. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow, so we hope you join us again then. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.